An hour before dawn, on November 28, 1618, a physician looked up from his house on the northern edge of London and gazed over the city between the steeples and the chimneys. Above them, in the darkness to the southeast, he saw a blazing star. It was colored a shade between green and blue, with a long white triangular tail. The comet gleamed with what he later called a bright resplendence. Medicine gave John Bainbridge a livelihood, but astronomy and mathematics excited him far more. An ambitious man of 36, he believed in the ideas of Copernicus, and he read what Johann Kepler wrote about the orbit of planets around the sun. In the comet, he saw a chance to defend their findings. In the frost of early winter, Bainbridge tracked the apparition for 4 weeks with the help of his telescopian or trunk spectacle, one of the first in England. Peering through its lenses, he plotted the position of the star with a wooden cross staff, collecting the data he needed to calculate its speed, altitude, and distance from the Earth. Day by day, he watched its colors fade and the comet diminish as it soared toward the northwest. He followed it past Scorpius and the Great Bear until it veered away into oblivion beyond the pole star. Swiftly, the doctor completed a book about his observations. In the manner of its time, it combined algebra, verse, and abject flattery of King James. Bainbridge pointed out that the gleaming star followed a course between New Guinea and the Arctic, and this could only mean one thing. As it traveled across the sky, the doctor said, the comet promised that God would reveal to the English the shining secret of another northwest passage, the icy route that led around the top of Canada to reach the East Indies by way of the Pacific. In the star, they beheld God's gift of wealth. From the Lord, the people of Great Britain would soon receive healthful spices, precious jewels, and oriental riches, as Bainbridge put it in his most exalted prose. Millions of others watched the comet too. From the Alps to Korea, and from Iran to the Philippines, we have vivid accounts of the blazing star, the brightest since the passing of Halley's Comet 11 years before. A teenage student at Cambridge University looked out of a window during morning prayers, saw the comet, and thought its tail resembled a fox's brush. In China, observers called it a shining broom that swept across the heavens, while in Paris, a journalist compared its round head to a burning coal and its tail to a long sheaf of wheat. In Isfahan, the Spanish ambassador likened its green flame and its appearance each morning to the planet Venus. That year, observers saw three comets, but everyone agreed that the Emerald Star was by far the most remarkable. From his home in Austria, Kepler first saw it break through the clouds 24 hours after Bainbridge, and he carefully noted its features. In Rome, the Jesuits had a professor of mathematics by the name of Orazio Grassi. He spoke of the crowds that gathered on hilltops to watch the visitation from the heavens, with no thought of sleep and no fear of the cold wind. In Florence, bedridden by gout or arthritis or kidney stones, his rival, the great Galileo, received a long line of visitors, eager to exchange their impressions of the comet for his opinion that it might be no more than vapor exhaled from the surface of the earth. Meanwhile, a royal invalid, Anne of Denmark, the Queen of England, lay sick with tuberculosis and dropsy. In the star, the people of London saw a luminous warning of her end. 3 months later, the Queen was dead, and the banqueting house of Whitehall Palace had burned to the ground. Far to the west, another group of men and women stared at the blazing star with rapt attention. Astronomy fascinated the native people of America every bit as much as it enthralled the admirers of Galileo. Describing the natives he met in Connecticut in the 1630s, the English radical Roger Williams found that, by occasion of their frequent lying in the fields or woods, they much observe the stars, and their very children can give names to many of them. By the rising and the setting of the Pleiades, they constructed their calendar, fixing the best time to sow seed for corn, to plant beans, or to begin a hunting party. In their legends, they gave events in the heavens a central role. Beside Lake Huron, the Ojibwa still spoke in the 1980s of a long-tailed climbing star, which nearly ended life on Earth long ago, and one day will return to finish the task. In Maine, folklore collected along the Penobscot include stories about a meteor that had warned of the outbreak of the American Civil War. We can be sure that the comet of 1618 caused just as much alarm in southern New England. Nearly 40 years later, in A History of the Colonies, Edward Johnson of Woburn, Massachusetts, described the way the people he called Indians followed the flaming star across the night sky. Like Bainbridge, they watched it each night for 4 weeks until it disappeared. They expected some strange things to follow, Johnson said. His laconic phrase conceals a world of meaning. The native people of New England split their cosmos into three realms: the sky, the earth, and a watery underworld. The boundaries between them could be crossed or penetrated by the souls of the dead, by a shaman in a trance, or by supernatural beings from above or below. Perhaps they thought of the comet as an eruption of divine power for good or ill from one cosmic zone into another. For men and women who prized the pattern of the heavens, an intervention of such a startling kind would foreshadow some great and unexpected event. Like the English expecting the death of their queen, most likely they made the comet an omen of destruction. And if they did, they were entirely correct.